on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us as we wrap up a busy week here at training camp. Alongside Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll get to your phone calls in a minute at 201-939-4513. You could also interact with us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We'll get to some news items out of training camp as the team will be practicing later today at 2:30 p.m. Eastern before, obviously, the weekend sets in. And then next week, they'll be in Cincinnati as they have joint practices with the Bengals. So we'll get into all of that, and then we'll get your feedback on the lines on Twitter. Jeff, it's good to be working with you again. How's everything?
That's good, Lance. Yeah, I mean, we're back together.
Absolutely.
They got the band back together. I said to you earlier, we'll probably get the highest ratings that this show's ever had because
no doubt.
And I are on here.
Goes without saying. Absolutely.
But yeah, you know, we're into August, and we're getting closer and closer to that first preseason game. And as we know, the camp's kind of chugging along here. I think this is practice number 7, maybe?
In that ballpark.
Somewhere around there. So they got a couple of days where they've had the pads on, which is important for a lot of reasons. Evaluation is important for the players because they get a chance to get out there and play in full pads. It is a little bit different than going out there in those shells and shorts and helmets because you got to get used to those things on your legs. I never wore... the pads. I just always had to wear the pants, but these guys got to get used to that. And they're a little heavier. But more importantly, what happens is the hitting, the physical parts of the game start to come out. And I think the big guys enjoy more of the full pads and hitting because that's when they get to flex their muscles a little bit and they get to, that's real football to those guys in the trenches. And I think that it's hard to evaluate and it's hard to practice when you're not going full go. So when they get these pads on, these guys can really go out at each other and show the coaches, staff, and the organization what type of player they can be. And certainly, right now there's a lot of questions that we have the Giants organization has got to address, especially this offensive line situation that's going on here. And certainly that's something we didn't want to have to talk about coming into this season because it's been a carousel of players the last couple of years, in and out and this and that. And for an offense that's coming off a good year last year, a new system with Ben McAdoo, you want to have some stability in that offensive line to build that offense around again and get better. We certainly know with what's going on the outside with the receivers, which has been spectacular. But to have this creep up in the offensive line situation, it's a little bit concerning to a lot of people.
Well, Jeff, you hit it right on the nose, and that's where we're going to start here in terms of the news items. There's injury concerns right now on the offensive line, and as Jeff mentioned, I mean, that was a huge storyline over the last few seasons. So right now, Ereck Flowers is still nursing the hip flexor. He did not practice for the last few days. Weston Richburg is dealing with knee tendonitis, and then Jeff Schwartz has soreness from his offseason ankle surgery. So those are three potential starters on the offensive line that did not practice at all yesterday. We'll know a little bit more as we approach practice at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Pat Flaherty, the offensive line coach, Jeff, we just were outside during his media avails. He spoke and he was asked about, how much does this impact practice and trying to build continuity? And, he seemed confident that, hey, we're getting other work in with some of the backups and so forth. But at the end of the day, just like we saw last season, Jeff, it's important to have five players in five spots heading into the first game of the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, we call it in football, professional football, whatever football level you play, it's called coach talk. The coach will sit up there and talk, he'll say the things, he'll say the right things. But in those meeting rooms, he's saying something different, and that is, hey, guys, let's go. If you can suck it up and get out there and play, then you can. And I believe that the guys want to be out there. We're talking about the National Football League. These guys are not, they're not wimps by any means, but... You got to be able to, and I saw from Pat, he was trying to allude to the fact that we get a chance to have these guys play those other positions, and that's good, because there is a time when a right guard might have to move into a different situation, or somebody's got to come off the bench that's a left tackle and has to move into left guard. But at some point in this juncture, we got to get to the consistency and the continuity of those guys, and right now it's tough. But he was also talking about, and it was interesting, he was saying how, there was a question by one of the reporters to Pat was, you know, is it important that Justin Pugh gets reps at that left guard, even though he's playing left tackle? And what he was talking about was that, you know, the left side is the left side. And, you know, if you're a guard, they've got bigger guys in front of you because the defensive tackles are much bigger than defensive ends. And you just, you know, you're not going to have to reach as far. If you're the left tackle, well, now you got smaller guys out there and you got a little more reach blocks and different techniques that the defensive ends are playing. But all in all, it's still the same stuff. It's still the left side. It's still the assignments. And so, you know, we'll see what happens today. I didn't see the injury report yet for practice, if those guys are going to come out and do what they got to do. But I think at this point, if it's me, I'm wanting to get these guys healthy enough to go up there against Cincinnati and get some live work against another team. And then going into that preseason game this Friday night.
Yeah, getting a feel for the Bengals defense, like you said, having those five players that you anticipate are going to at least be in the preseason game, that would be a positive. They're hoping to get these guys back to full health over the next few days. But, you know, it really is a see-and-wait type of approach, Jeff, because you also don't want to re-aggravate injuries and then, God forbid, have a player out a little bit longer.
And what I liked about these practices with other teams is that, you know, we always – the first preseason game – you get a snapshot of the starters playing in the first preseason game. Well, when you go up and you practice against a team with two full practices, one full padded, the other one with just helmets and shoulder pads, the reps that you're going to get against these guys in practice, they're way more than you're going to get on the football field in a preseason game. That first preseason game is not for the veterans. It's for the other guys that they're trying to evaluate and make the team. So that's how important it is to get these guys healthy to go into Cincinnati next week and have a good practice against them.
Two other notes on the offensive line. Pat Flaherty did say that they view Marshall New tackle at this point in terms of the arrangements and so forth. And what Jeff was talking about with respect to Justin Pugh, who's been getting most of his reps at left tackle, visualization, and this was what you were hitting at home, Jeff, on, is so important for a guy like Pugh, because when he is at the left tackle spot, he's not going to be getting his reps at left guard, but because of the similarities between both positions, as long as he's visualizing, okay, these are the mechanics that need to go into full force when I play the tackle position or when I play the guard position, he should be in good shape, even if he has to get thrown back to guard last week.
And you know, just because you see him out there at left tackle in the team periods of the practice doesn't mean that he's not getting those reps at left guard in the individual stuff that they're doing during practice, because he'll jump in there at left tackle, then he'll jump in there and get a couple reps at left guard and then bounce back out to left tackle. So, you know, he is getting the reps there, and we had an interview with him today, and he had mentioned that, yeah, he does get these reps and it helps him. You know, on the other side, if he has to go back over to the right, which we anticipate he's not going to do that, but that's when, for offensive linemen, it's almost being like right-handed and left-handed. You know, it's completely different because the way you set, the way you come back, your fits are different on the right and to the left, so it is tough. And so, you know, those swing players, the guys that can go back and forth, they're special. And usually there's one guy on every team. If you remember, Booth was one of those guys that could play anywhere. You got to have one of those guys, and you know, certainly they're important to the team.
Sean Locklear would be another one, and even David Deal, who was moved around too during his tenure here.
Absolutely. And, you know, and you saw when David Deal got hurt and Locklear went in there, and then David Deal, he got healthy, and then they didn't replace him back before, but didn't put Deal back into the game until he kind of, you know, then Sean got hurt. You got to have, and Coach Flaherty, he said in his interviews that, you know, we got to have enough guys that are able to play multiple positions. So that's why we're inserting them at different places.
On the injury front, in terms of the secondary, Tom Coughlin, after practice yesterday, announced that Nat Burhe had an MRI and he has some type of a tear in his calf muscle. So there really is no timetable at this point when he's going to return. Burhe spoke to the media, said that he's feeling better, but he does anticipate that he'll sit out the next few days. And with respect to Burhe, Jeff, you know, this is a golden opportunity for him with a wide open battle for both of those safety positions. You know, this is the time that a player like that wants to be on the field. And all of a sudden, just like OTAs and minicamp, the injury bug strikes again.
It's unfortunate because you know, the guys work so hard to get back from injury. And certainly in OTAs and spring practices, when you're not getting the reps out there that he didn't, you can talk all you want about mental rest. But until you're on the field and going through and you know, your assignments and chasing down footballs and all that stuff, it is lost time and it is missed opportunities. And unfortunately, the injuries are part of the game. But you know, it's a tough thing for him because that is a wide-open competition. I mean, when you look at the guys that are piled in there from the veterans to the new guys, it's somebody's two of those guys are coming out of there going to be starting. So right now they're, you know, you look at Bennett Jackson, what he's doing.
He's looked really good.
And he's doing everything that a young man could do in this situation. He's given the opportunity. He's on the field. He's not making a lot of mental mistakes. He's playing the ball well. He's getting into his run fits. He knows what he's doing back there. And then you got Collins, who has a high pedigree coming off of where he played from. So this is a tough thing for Nat Burhey to be able to sit on the sideline. Hopefully he gets well soon because, you know, he certainly was going to compete for that starting position.
Let's open up the phone lines here on a Friday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513. We'll get to your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. Max is in New York City. He gets us going here on a Friday. Max, what's happening?
Hey, Max.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well, Max.
Good, thank you. Hey, I have a couple things. My first one's more directed towards Jeff.
Sure.
Obviously, we've all known the Giants led the league in led the league with pup lifts 2 years in a row. And all these injuries sparking, and they did address it. Coach Coughlin said numerous times that, you know, they've changed things. You'll notice that if you're watching practices. But, like, is this kind of a reason to be concerned, whether you're a fan or just even a player of the team, that maybe they're doing something wrong? You know, we lead it 2 years in a row. All right, you know, maybe there's, you know, some flukiness to that. But then Beatty has a torn pectoral. And all of a sudden, all these guys are going down. Is there maybe it's not a coincidence? Maybe it's, you know, something more than that.
Well, I think, you know, as Giants fans, we're pretty hyper focused on what's going on with this team. I think if we were to talk to other people around the league, like ourselves, that follow the Giants, maybe following the Patriots or whatever, you know, everybody has their share of these types of injuries. But I get what you're saying, and I think that the Giants take a long, hard look at this too, because they want to understand why. And it's so difficult at any level. The injuries are very hard to understand why things happen. The makeup of certain players when they're going through evaluations and things like that. But then when you get, you know, 90 guys here in camp, it's hard. So they are making some types of effort to go into research and do things like that, whether it's through nutrition or any of this GPS stuff. So, but the bottom line here is that injuries happen for a reason. And most of the time with the injuries that I've ever had, it's because I was either my hamstrings were tight because I was lifting a certain way or this and that. So I think in the big picture, they take all this into consideration, and it starts with the strength and conditioning coach, the trainers, and the nutrition and all that stuff. But, you know, it's tough. I mean, it really is. But the Giants have just been snake bit the last 2 years, that's for sure.
And I just have one more thing, just as a fan.
Sure.
This kind of is for both of you. Obviously, you can't take much from preseason, you know, it's
right,
you know, very vanilla. But if you guys were saying, as a fan of maybe this team specifically, we could take one thing to look for that could that would be a big factor and could translate into the regular season, what would you say that one thing would be to look for? Like, what's most regular season game like in the preseason?
It's probably that third game, the first half and into the third quarter. That's all you're going to get. I mean, that's when I think those are – at that point in time, both teams are on the same page as far as playing time for their starters. So that third preseason game, the first three quarters or two and a half, is probably what you're going to get as far as what you're going to see from the team and who's the personnel. You know, and barring going into to that third preseason game, let's see how many of those 22 players or starters, if you will, are healthy. So maybe you get 18 or 17 of them that you know are going to be – those are going to be your guys. Because by the third preseason game, your roster is pretty much set. And, you know, they make the cuts after that game and get down to the – I think it's maybe 60 guys or whatever it is. And then they cut to the 53 after that last game.
Max, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, Max.
The reason why that third preseason game is so key, as you were just touching on, Jeff, especially if you look at the two biggest storylines, I think, for the Giants entering this offseason, offensive line play whether or not they're going to bounce back in terms of getting the running game going,
yep.
and then the continuity at safety. So you figure through the first two preseason games, hopefully the offensive line is healthy. They'll be able to move guys around, and same thing with the safety. So by the time you get to that third preseason game, all right, you have an idea if you're the coaching staff, mm-hmm. which two safeties are the ideal fit,
yeah.
which five offensive linemen. So therefore, you're going to keep them in together for at least a few quarters, and then the evaluation process really begins.
See how they play. And then those first two preseason games, you're going to be getting those guys and giving them an opportunity to show what they can do in those games. The younger guys will get a lot more work than the veterans. But when they're, even though, and I'll tell you this, when there is a fierce competition at a certain position, like the safety, you know, you're going to see veterans play, and you're going to see them out there because they're competing. There is no clear-cut guy that's going to be a starter. But when you look at that safety position, there really is no veteran other than Mundy.
Josh Gordy is another one that you
throw out.
Yeah,
I mean, so those are the guys that you're going to see maybe a little bit more in this in these preseason games.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Jason is in New Jersey. Jason, welcome aboard. What do you have?
Hi, Jason.
Hey. Yeah, this is Jason. I just wanted to talk about two players, James Jones and John Jerry. First, James Jones, I feel that right now he's the third best receiver on the team. I think he's better than Reuben Randall because I think last year Oakland kind of played him out of position. They used him in the slot too much. James Jones even said himself that he's at his best on the outside. And I think that with the type of throws that Eli likes to make, and I think we're going to use James Jones as like the Z receiver on the outside opposite of Beckham. I think that's going to be a really good combination. And I do like him over Randall because I feel that James Jones is a professional receiver and Reuben Randall just is kind of just lollygags too much and a little bit lazy.
Well, I will tell you this. Let me comment on that real quickly. That, you know, you look at those two players in themselves, they're both going to get a lot of ball. When you look at Beckham and Cruz and then Jones and Randall, Beckham and Cruz are going to take most of the the attention. And so those other two guys, you know, you look at Jones, he caught over 70 balls last year in Oakland.
And that was with a rookie quarterback, too.
And he's what a fit. I mean, I still having a hard time believing that he's on this team. I mean, a guy that catches 78 balls or whatever it was, what a perfect fit for the Giants. A guy to come in that knows the system. There's not really much of a learning curve for him. So we'll see how that plays out. And again, you know, we it just depends on the health of that squad and who can stay healthy and just like every position. And then they'll fit him in there. But you go four wides with those guys, you're going to have to pick their poison.
And, Jason, that basically is why I wouldn't get too worked up on who's number three and who's number four on the depth chart because, as Jeff just mentioned, you know, Ben McAdoo likes to move his receivers around. They're going to have certain plays for each guy. The goal is you just want consistency. You don't want to drop off from when you go from one wide receiver to another, and that's obviously why they're going to give everybody ample opportunities during the preseason.
I think we'll have a good year out of Reuben Randall. It's a contract year for him. He's certainly going to get a lot of balls thrown his way because of Cruz and Beckham. And, you know, when anytime you're – although Hakeem Nicks didn't play too well in his contract year, you know, so I mean you got to be careful. But if I'm a player, which I was, and I have my contract year was coming up, I was playing my lights out. I wanted to do as much as I can to try to make that to get that next contract.
Jason, who else did you have a question about?
The O-line.
Yeah, my second point. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, my second point was on John Jerry. Seeing all these injuries to the offensive line, I'm just very comfortable with John Jerry starting. I thought that I love the way that he sets the pocket. I believe that the passing game starts with a firm inside pocket, and I love that John Jerry, with his size, his girth, his anchor, his ability to handle power rushes, like the interior rushes, try to bull rush and collapse the pocket. I love the way that John Jerry is able to control the line of scrimmage in the pass game and give Eli pocket to step into. And if you look at John Jerry last year, I thought he was the best offensive lineman in the last three games. In week 15 against the Redskins, week 16 against the Rams, week 17 against the Eagles, he was the best offensive lineman overall to close out the year. And if you look at it, his two worst games last year against the 49ers and the Jaguars, they both coincided when his starting right tackle left the game. So in the 49ers game, Charles Brown came in early, and he was lost. He had no idea what he was doing, and that hurt John Jerry. And then in the Jaguars game, Jeff Schwartz left the game early, and then they brought in James Brewer, and then that also hurt John Jerry. Those were his two worst games by far. You take out those two games, in the other 14 games, I thought John Jerry was more than solid. And just overall, he's a great interior pass blocker. I love the way, like I said, he controls the middle of the pocket. And if we have to go with him as a starter, I'm okay with that.
Well,
I want to know what you thought about.
I'll tell you, he's a better pass blocker than he is a run blocker. And I think that the Giants, according to my notes, and this is kind of glad we were talking, they were 30th, or they were the 29th, or the defense.
Well, they were 23rd in rushing yards per game, and then 28th they were tied for per carry.
This offense has got to improve that running game, because we all know that the running game sets up the passing game, and this passing game can be phenomenal if we have a good running game. And those guys got to play better. Whichever five they're going to be, including Jerry, he's going to have to run block a little bit better. But I agree with you there. I think he's a solid offensive lineman. He's not a Pro Bowl player, but he's not, you know, he's a guy that's going to get the job done for you. And you know, he can play. He's certainly going to be playing it for the Giants this year somewhere. God only knows where. These guys jump around so much, but I think he's a quality offensive lineman, and I agree with you.
And Jason, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. The good news about a guy like John Jerry is you want to have an insurance player like that, Jeff, a seasoned veteran who's been in different situations. In the event that, like you said, an injury comes up, you know he's comfortable with the system. You can always plug him in.
Yeah, and I think he would tell you too that he needs to improve his run blocking, and you know, it seems to me that the Giants are trying to run to that left side. That's going to be their bread and butter over there with Pugh and Flowers. If you know, and I'm thinking that Flowers is going to get healthy and come back. He played a lot of games in college. He doesn't seem to be the guy that gets hurt a lot, so I think he'll be back in just a matter of time. And but they're, you know, the running game, Lance, we saw it last year on the defensive side, we saw how every offense and 31 other teams could run against the Giants last year. They were horrible against the run. And, you know, we haven't talked much about this Steve Spagnuolo's defense, what's coming in here, because, you know, this is another transition. Last year it was the new offense. This year it's the new defense. And we got a lot to see in preseason about this defense. And I was on the team when he was here with Spags, and it's a fun defense to watch play. It really is. I mean, the game has changed a little bit since 2007. I mean, Spagnuolo's defense, they got after the passer. But, you know, in today's game, you got to be able to cover and still get some pressure on the quarterback.
And that's why the two play of the corners, Prince and DRC, are key,
no,
especially
and
with two young safeties.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's head back to the phone lines. Angelo is on the line. Angelo, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hello?
Yeah,
hello.
Doing well, Angelo. What's happening? What do you got for us?
Hey, all right, what's going on? Quick question. Odell Beckham, I know he's great and everything. I just wanted to make sure, I don't know if anybody knows, Jeff, you, I know you, I don't know if you, how much you know with the receivers, what they do in their in the film room, but do they watch DBs that they're going to go against this year?
Because
I know I saw an article a while back or something that, like, what makes Darrelle Revis, for example, so great is that he watches all summer long all the receivers he will go up against for that year, and that's why it helps him become the best shutdown corner in the game. I just wanted to know if Odell Beckham and Cruz and everybody else is watching film on, or, I mean, well, mostly Odell Beckham because he's going to be getting the number one corner in every team. Do you know if he watches film on everybody to know, like, some of their tendencies or whatever, just to help him get an edge?
Well, you know, at every position, whether it's receivers or quarterbacks, you know, what have you, it's always nice to be able to have a veteran at that position because, you know, these young guys have to be taught how to prepare in the National Football League. I mean, when you come from college, you're only allowed to be at the facility for so long. You know, and college guys, we all went to college. Well, not everybody, but, you know, it's when you're in college, you got things to do. You know, your whole focus is not in the film room. But when you get to the NFL, this is your job. But somebody has got to teach you how to prepare. And so you look at somebody like Victor Cruz, who was here when some of the veteran receivers were here, that was able to teach them how to do things. Well, now Victor Cruz is here, and he's teaching those younger guys how to do things. You get Jones in here, who's a salty veteran. He understands how to prepare for games. And to answer your question, yes, they do. They study game in and game out. They got these iPads they take home. It's loaded up with games so they can constantly look at their opponent. And it's just like anything else. If I was sitting here with my kids, the more you study, the better you're going to do in school. The more you study in the classroom here, the better you're going to be in. Because the games are built on matchups. And if you can capitalize on your matchup and understand your opponent, your guy you're going across, and whoever studies him the most, and you look at Darrell Revis, that's why he's so good. Well, you know what? If he's watching a certain alignment that this guy gets in, it's that he tips it off. He takes an inside release every single time. Well, if he's picked that up on film, he's going to take away that inside release for that guy. So they are studying, and that is what they do. And, of course, they're studying their game plan and things like that. But when you have a new system, it's more difficult because not only are you trying to learn a new system that they just put in, but now you're trying to study your opponent too. So this year the offense is going to be able to do a little bit more preparation when it comes to that because they already got an offense under their belt.
And Angelo, it's going to help the fact that he's going to go up against DRC and Prince every single day in practice. So that, I think, is going to be ideal preparation for a player like Odell Beckham. And don't overlook the value of the scout team, which is going to mimic what those other corners are going to do. For example, Bennett Jackson, he was talking to the media earlier this week, and he said, you know, one of the things that at least helped him develop as a player last season was even though he underwent microfracture knee surgery, he was still a member of the scout team. He was a member of the practice squad, and he would watch the mannerisms, how they go about preparing, studying the opponent so that he could help his teammates get ready for the game. So all of those things, I think, are going to come into play to help Odell Beckham continue to progress as a wide receiver.
The other thing, too, you know, even though you're on practice squad and you don't get to travel with the team and you don't get the, you know, those guys don't even go to the games. They can go to the games, but they're not on the sideline or anything. But during the week, like Lance said, they're in the meeting rooms. They're in there learning how to study. They're learning the game just like the guys that play on Sunday.
Angelo, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks
so much,
Angelo,
for weighing
in.
Let's head back to lines. Christian is in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I wanted to talk a bit about the safeties, and I know it's real early. But if you end up having Landon Collins and Bennett Jackson as your starters, that would be great because they actually complement each other and they would let each other play to their strengths most of the time. And I know Spags really likes to mix it up and keep things unpredictable. But, I mean, if you can have both guys playing to their strengths around, you know, 65-70% of the time, I really think that would help out a lot.
Well, there's no question, and I think that that's one of the things that the coaches are trying to find is, you know, if you're a coach, your ultimate goal is to try to get the player that you're coaching to play as well as he can, and by helping him is with what does he do best, okay? If he runs well, then you get him in situations to be able to run well. If he's a running back and he doesn't carry the ball good, you got to teach him to carry the ball well. So they're going to put him his skill set, they're going to try to find what fits for him and design something around those two guys, whatever players they are, they're going to work on their skill set and put them in situations to succeed and not to fail.
Yeah, and like I understand how he looks at it more as left and right safety, but you're going to get the most out of them if you just let them do what they're good at or best at.
You got to remember too.
And I understand. I'm sorry. What?
Dude, we got to remember too. The other teams are scouting these guys too. So they're gonna find their tendencies, and try to get them if they're, you know, the right and the left safety, and they're gonna design things around to maybe get those guys out of position to exploit their weaknesses too. So sorry to interrupt you on that.
Oh, that's all right. And you know, it's a bit of a copycat league too. And if you look at what Seattle's doing, they got Earl Thomas back there, and it's no mystery. And they also have Chancellor up in the box, and that's no mystery either. That's just how they play,
that's
so effective for them. So it's proven that it can work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and that's what they're trying to experiment with right now, Christian. I appreciate the phone call. The best fit. It's not necessarily who has the best skill set. It's who is the best fit for the scheme, Jeff, but also who obviously complements one another very well. And I think Bennett Jackson and Landon Collins, from what we've seen in practice, you know, they do a nice job complementing one another, but I don't think you're really going to be able to tell who stands out, Jeff, until we get to actually game atmosphere here.
Yeah, and I think both of them tackle well. I mean, both of them are physical. I mean, you look at Bennett Jackson, he's not a very big guy, but I'll tell you what, he can run well. He can tackle well. He's physical. And then you look at Collins, he's a big guy, you know, so they can put either one of those guys down in the box and disguise coverages if they wanted to, and I think they will.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us for Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Andrew is in Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening? Andrew, are you there? Andrew is a man of very few words. Let's try Shakes in Maryland. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Doing well, Shakes.
Hey, Shakes.
What do you got?
First off, Jeff Fiegels, I know we had a conversation before where I told you I appreciate the
sure you did.
Everything
it was just
you've done
the other
for
the day. Yeah. You taking that back now? Don't take it back.
Yeah, no, I'm not taking it back. But I also wanted to just include that, you know, a lot of players that come on the team, I don't really consider them as true blue Giants unless they was drafted by the Giants or something like that, homegrown, and spent some years with us. But with you, I consider you a true blue Giant, man. You are a true Giant.
Like
so
I feel like it. I love this organization. I love playing for them when I did. And I appreciate that, Shakes. What's going on with you today?
No doubt. Yeah, Shakes, now that you buttered him up, why don't you get to the real point here?
Keep going, Shakes. Yeah. Keep going. I don't get that kind of love at home either, so just keep going.
All right, I got a question for y'all. Well, actually, two. The CBA, I'm looking around the league, and everybody's going down. And I'm looking at the fact of they don't practice as much as they used to, and the injuries – maybe I'm wrong, but it hasn't occurred as much as it has been lately. So I think the CBA, I think they got something wrong here, and I think that they need to do something. What do y'all think about that?
Well, you know, I have a theory, and for what it's worth.
Just throw it out there.
And I'm
going to
you know, listen, I got to throw this out there first. I wasn't a guy that mixed it up and, you know, was hitting and all that kind of stuff, but I will tell you this. I still ran as much as everybody did. I did all the lifting that everybody did. I just didn't do the hitting. But in my mind, an athlete at this level and physical level that the National Football League is, I just believe that the body has to be conditioned to play the sport. And if you're out there and you're not doing that, and I think that that's where the CBA is lacking, is that there's not enough time on the field for these guys to do things, and there's not enough hitting. Even though the players don't want to do it, but, you know, there has to be a give somewhere. And I think that the bodies just are not conditioned. Now, the game has evolved into a certain point where now, you know, the league is so concerned about injuries and so are players because we have a big dollar sign that we stick on the table because there's so much money invested in these guys. So it's a fine line. And, you know, where do you draw that line is like how many hours you're going to be on the field and how many practice. The players are going to, you know, they're going to moan and gripe over it. And then there's the owners and the coaches that say, we don't get enough of this. So it's a tough situation, and I don't think there's any real cut way to say one is right or one is wrong. It just depends on which side of the fence you're playing, really.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking around, and I'm looking at all these injuries and these muscle tears and everything. Like, these guys are not conditioned well, and I think it's the CBA.
Well, it's you know, and we had an earlier call was asking us about the Giants and their injury situations, and I had said that, you know, we're kind of hyper-focused on what the Giants do, but when you look around the league, and if you're a Bengals fan or a Patriots fan and you're hyper-focused on that team, these guys have just as many injuries as the Giants do. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just not as reported, and we're not talking about it as much because, you know, you get the fluke ones, you know, the ACL guy. I mean, how are you going to prevent that? I mean, that just happens. But, you know, the strains and the hamstrings and the little stuff like that, you know, the soft tissue injuries that they talk about, those are the ones that perplex you. The major injuries, when you blow out a knee, you blow out a knee. I mean, that's hard to stop, you know. So it's and if you're a Coach Coughlin or any of these head coaches, it drives them crazy. It drives them nuts because we're trying to get the 22 best guys on the field. And when you got guys that are in the training room that aren't practicing, it's very difficult on these coaches and staff to put something together and go out and win games. That's what it's all about, Jake. You know that.
I know. I don't want to take too much time. I still have another question, but I wanted to piggyback off that real quick. Do you think raising the roster limit would help?
Well, they've done a little bit. They raised the practice squad.
Correct. They've increased that to 10.
To 10, so they went up two guys. I think they, in the last couple of years, they've increased the training camp size. I think it's up to 90 guys now.
Yep.
So, yeah, they're trying to do that. Back a long, long time ago, there was 120 guys in camp. But when you got 120 guys in camp, how many reps you think those guys, these starters and stuff, they're not getting anything because they're like, hey, man, I got those guys next to me. Get in there, rookie. Get in there. You know, so when you got 120, those guys, but when it comes down, the guys got to practice a little bit more. So it's a crazy formula, but, you know, injuries are a part of the game. You just hope you don't get a lot of serious ones.
Shakes, appreciate the phone call, Shakes.
Have a great weekend,
I'm sorry,
Shakes.
Man, one more.
Real quick.
And I'll get off with the
what guy. Else you got?
Jennings is with the second and third teams. What's up with that? Like, is that something we should really be looking into? Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
Appreciate the phone call, Shakes. I wouldn't read too much into that. Shane Vereen has been working with the first team, but they've really been mixing and matching, just like we're seeing with the safeties. At this point, it's just trying to get all the running backs working with the first team and the second team to see who's an ideal fit. And Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, Jeff, even spoke about this. He says, I want to see, can Shane Vereen be a goal line back? I want to see, can Andre Williams be used on third down as a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield? What can Rashad Jennings do to maybe continue to milk more out of him? So it's really just getting a feel for the different running backs. I think it's way too early to start to speculate this guy now is going to only work with the first team. He's going to get 15 carries. This one's going to be limited to 10.
And you got Shane Vereen, who's coming into a new system. So you want to get him a lot of reps, try to get him to understand the position in the offense. You got Andre Williams, who's a young guy still. He got a lot of playing time, more than we thought he would have last year. He did catch the ball maybe 10 times more than he did in his career.
More than his entire career.
I mean, unbelievable. And then you got Rashad Jennings, who's 30 years old, okay? A 30-year-old in the National Football League has to be he's got to kind of – it's a different recipe, if you will. You know, listen, you're not going to run that guy out there like a 23-year-old guy. You got to save his leg. So, you know, they're taking a little bit of reps away from him, and this is my opinion, because he, you know, he's an older guy, and you just want to kind of – you want to save him a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. And the other thing I'll add to what Shakes brought up, Jeff, is the fact that, remember, the goal when they brought Shane Vereen in was this season, probably unlike maybe the recent years, it's going to be most likely a running back by committee style. You have three talented backs. You want to use all three.
Yeah.
The goal is not to just have one guy carry it 20 to 25 times and have the other two watch. So that's why, at the end of the day, I don't really think it makes a difference who's getting first-team reps in practice, who's getting second-team reps. The goal is they can all use all three backs anyway once it comes down to the regular season.
This isn't a high school team that can't throw the football, and they just got to run. You know, and they get the one fullback in there and the tailback,
exactly.
And that's what they're going to do. And the offenses are so complex. They put players in different positions. You look at Vereen, he'll go wide. He'll be on the outside, and
as a receiver.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, another thing too is to look at, you know, there's a curve in the National Football League. When you first come in, the bell curve, you play special teams, you know, and then you start to be a starter and you get up there and you're playing your position, and on the backside of your career, coming back down, you start to get back into those special teams roles again and not as much playing time because of your age and your injuries. So you look at a guy like Rashad Jennings, where, you know, he's kind of on that bell curve. You know, he's not a young guy. He's not an old guy, but he's kind of on the backside of his career. And you want to be careful what you do with him, but you want to be able to make sure that he can still play special teams if he has to. And, you know, in my opinion, a lot of coaches are afraid to play starters on special teams, but it's a third of the game, and sometimes it can make a huge difference in winning games. It's trying to have some of your starters play special teams.
Jeff, speaking of preserving players and conditioning, the other part of what Shakes brought up, and you talked about, you know, why perhaps there's so many injuries, the new CBA,
mm-hmm.
Is there more of an emphasis, do you believe, given the fact that there are less practices and perhaps a little longer off season for guys to be on their own, that they are more disciplined themselves without coaches on top of them, more so than perhaps
no
when you played earlier in your career?
You had to be, well, you have to be now, because the coaches are not allowed to be around you. And so, you know, in my mind, one thing when I'm signing players or I'm drafting players and I'm doing my research and my due diligence on these guys is I want to find out from the coaches. I want to find out from the strength coach where he came from, whether it's a pro team or a college team. What is this guy's work ethic? What does he do on his own that you see him doing things off the field that I don't have to be around him? Those are things that are important in the evaluation process even before he gets on the field. Because to your point, when I leave here from the facility in June and I come back at the end of July for training camp, I got that 5 or 6 weeks off. That is when the true character of a guy is going to come out. Off the field stuff. Is he going to be training every single day, or is he going to be sitting at home eating Twinkies and saying, you know what, I got 5 weeks left, no big deal. All I want to do is pass the conditioning test. Because that's really a lot of times what guys want to do. They're like, I don't care. I just got to pass the conditioning test.
Just so I'm eligible to practice.
But then they'll think I'm in shape. Well, that's wrong, because they'll tell you if you can run this. Now, I thought this was kind of good this year. It was very smart in my mind. The conditioning test that the Giants ran this year was not about endurance. So most of those are. Because, I mean, I've ran every conditioning test in the history of man. 22 years in the
NFL.
They
can't throw you a curveball at
no,
this point.
No, I did them all. Okay? And most of them were about endurance. And most of them were built on you better go and practice and run these or you're going to fail the test. Okay? So that's why I said everybody's worried about that. What the Giants did this year, they said, okay, all we want you to do is run 10 70-yard sprints. Okay? And the number was ridiculous. 10 seconds or something. Okay? We're going to do that, and we're going to run, and we're going to run those. I mean, you can run those in your sleep. But what they did was they put the heart monitor on them. And so the whole conditioning test was based on recovery. If you're in good shape and you run 10 70-yard sprints and your heart rate gets up to that maximum amount and they gave them 2 minutes to rest after, if your heart rate comes down to a certain level, you're in shape. If your heart rate is up there like mine would be right now, you're not in shape.
That's a red flag.
So that's the red flag. So it's funny because I was asking Weatherford about it. I said, what was the conditioning test? He goes, oh, 1070s. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. 1070s? That's a conditioning test? He goes, no, no. And so he was telling me about the whole thing. And so that makes sense. So, you know, that's kind of, I know we got off subject here, but I think it's fun to understand, you know, that was what the conditioning test was. And back to your question is these guys have to be, self-disciplined and being able to work out on their own.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Andrew is in Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey guys, how you doing? Can you hear me this time?
We hear you loud and clear. You recovered very nicely, Andrew. We weren't going to give you a third chance, I'm glad you bounced back. Yeah.
I follow the Giants like it's law, and mostly the NFC East. When you get out of those teams, I don't know as much about their rosters, so I'm not throwing any names out there. But this whole offensive line situation is making me very nervous. You can't do – I don't care if we have Jerry Rice, Chris Carter, all them guys out there. If there's no offensive line, nobody's doing anything. I love our wide receivers, but sometimes you got to sacrifice. Do you think there's any way possible that we could package up some of our back-end wide receivers who are still real good, maybe for a trade somewhere to get a decent offensive lineman without as much of an injury risk?
Well, I mean, I think big picture perspective, at the end of the day, Andrew, most teams are in a situation where they don't have a great deal of depth on the offensive line. You know, they have their five guys, and then, you know, maybe you have one or two reliable backups that you feel confident you can plug in. So I don't think at this point you're going to find a team that is willing to give up an offensive lineman that you, based on your rankings and your statistics, think could be a difference maker for the Giants. I mean, that's how I think you have to look at it. It's not so much that the Giants don't have appealing pieces to ship out of town. It's that what other team is willing to part ways with a key contributor at this point? I don't see a lot of teams willing to do that.
The other thing, too, is that, you know, even the guys that are on the street now, I mean, you look at all these 32 NFL teams at 90-guy rosters, there isn't many – the picking is very slim out there who's available, and the guys that are only available are coming off of injuries like a Jake Long or some other guys like that, that they have to make sure that they can pass a physical. We know they can play, but it's just a matter of them staying healthy. And so it's a tough thing. When you go into training camp, you got all your eggs in one basket, man. You've done your offseason, free agency, your drafts, and all that. I mean, you got to be prepared that this is who I'm going to war with, and if something happens – you know, you look back on how you built the team, and you better have some depth there.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Everybody's in the same situation, but it just drives me crazy because I agree with what the Giants have been doing in drafting linemen in the first two rounds of the draft for the past couple of years, and that's like what I think you're supposed to do, and it's still not like panning out totally.
Well, Andrew, keep in mind the two offensive linemen who are young that fit the criteria that you just threw out, they're banged up. It's not as if they're not capable of playing consistent football. Richburg's dealing with knee tendonitis, and Eric Flowers, your first-round pick from this year, is dealing with a hip flexor. Once they get fully healthy, the goal is they're going to be in the lineup each and every day practicing and getting ready for games. So the personnel's there. It's just, unfortunately, the injuries have disrupted things.
And I look at how this Giants team is tried to build this offensive line, starting with Will Beatty. Okay, I mean, I'm going to go from the veteran down to there. You got Will Beatty. You got Justin Pugh. I mean, look at all these. These are first-round draft picks, second-round draft. You got Richburg, okay?
Second-round pick.
And now you got Flowers. So, you know, we can see the intent of wanting to build a quality offensive line with first and second round draft picks. Unfortunately, you know, this whole thing to me, it predicated itself on Beatty getting hurt in the offseason. That really, really hurt. And because, you know, he had a good year last year. The year before he didn't. And so, I mean, now you were going to have a good starting left tackle, a healthy left tackle. You're going to move a guy that played all 16 games at Justin Pugh to left guard, okay, which was where they figured that's where he needed to be. You got a guy, Richburg, who played a lot more than he should have last year. He got a lot of experience, a second rounder, okay? And then you move to the right side where, you know, that was going to kind of be a little work in motion. But the fact is that this offensive line was starting to kind of become a good squad, but now when Beatty gets hurt, everything kind of goes around. So
yeah,
it's tough.
I hear you guys.
It's tough. It really is. You know, and the trades in the NFL, as you know, covering it, they don't happen a lot, especially at this juncture in the game. But it's easy for us to sit here and say, "Man, I wish they would do it." But in the grand scheme of things, you know, they don't.
And Andrew, appreciate the phone call. The other thing I want to mention with respect to the trades, and you just said obviously they're very rare because, you know, we don't see even a lot around the deadline. If you're a team, let's say you need a wide receiver, Jeff, considering so many guys are going to get cut in a few weeks, why give up a key piece when you can just wait for somebody on the free agent market?
And there's no question.
So I think that's the other aspect.
And that's what these guys do. But, you know, the next cut line is far away. It's 3 weeks away
of course.
From now. You know, so if you're in a glaring need. But if I'm a GM on another team, and you made this point, why am I going to give you some, unless I'm in it? But, you know, I don't even know. If you look at the guys that are behind the four or five receivers that we have here, I don't know if he's going to trade for those guys. I mean, they're another. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you put a Cruz or a Beckham in there,
that's a different story.
Well, it's a different story. But now we're stupid. That ain't going
to
happen.
You're right. You're not giving up your fifth or sixth wide receiver to get a starting caliber offensive lineman. No. I mean, that is extremely wishful thinking. And
I'm
if
not
a GM,
giving you Corey Washington for your starting right guard.
I would want to trade with that other GM every single day of my life if he was willing to part
ways
with
that. Maybe one day Corey Washington might be that kind of a player, but today he's not. But he's getting there, right?
So. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mike's in New York. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Doing all right. my question is about the O-line, too.
You sound a little dejected.
I was going to say. Mike, you got to bring the enthusiasm here on a Friday afternoon. Yeah. You're killing us here.
Oh, yeah, well, all right, here we go. So we got O-lines yesterday that consisted of Pugh, Geddes, Reynolds, Schwartz, and Newhouse. And let's imagine that everybody's healthy and we go back to Eric Flowers, Pugh at guard, Richburg, Schwartz, and hopefully Newhouse resurrects himself. Mm-hmm. I don't know where we are with that. The Giants seem very confident, seem very content to put Flowers at left tackle in a league that only every year gets better at pass rushing, more aggressive at it, higher paid players, and I can't remember the last time a single player has come into the league and immediately played left tackle. They've always either gone to right tackle and then moved to left tackle halfway through the year or because of injuries. I mean, even Larry Allen came in to the league as a guard and then forced to play at tackle, and of course, you know, that worked out. I think Flowers has tons of skills, but I'm very particularly worried about his hand skills. I scouted him out. He has very good footwork for a guy his size. He has incredible recovery when he is first engaged, but he doesn't know how to engage himself, and he's very grabby on the outside. He doesn't stay on the inside. So I am not confident he can be ready, but the Giants seem to be totally convinced they can make this work. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think there's one guy that can, I think, that helps the situation, and that's Pat Flaherty. I feel like he's one of the best in the league at coaching. I think that he can get these guys on a level that they may not get right away somewhere else. And I will tell you that, you know, Flowers, they're banking on him being the guy. And so they've got him in there playing, you know, he's taking first team reps, he's taking second team reps. This little injury has set him back, which is going to hurt him as far as the reps go. But I think that, you know, and you're right. Hey, you're getting thrown to the fire there at left tackle. That's the most important position on an offensive line for a franchise quarterback like Eli Manning. So they're putting a lot of confidence that he can get it done. And, you know, obviously being drafted in the first round and being scouted out and all this stuff. You know, there's no perfect player, as you know, and there's always some obstacles or some negative things on the guy, and they just got to work on those. So, you know, and we don't even know when Beattie's going to come back. You know, so if he comes back quicker than he's going to – PUP is 6 weeks. If they got him on PUP,
well, they're
right?
You're probably looking at maybe late October, early November at the earliest, and that's just pure speculation at this
point. So, I mean, you know, he's going to – if he's healthy, then you certainly don't want to have Will Beattie on the bench. He's going to try to find him. So then where does Flowers go to? Maybe to right tackle or what have you. So, you know, they got to – I really think that he needs to get – this is Captain Obvious here. You know, he needs to get well and he needs to get on that field. He really needs the reps.
He's got to get those reps specifically in preseason games, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Thank you.
He needs to get the feel for the pass rush, Jeff. That's the key for him.
He has to get ready for the speed. And the last caller had alluded to the fact that, you know, these guys are getting better and stronger and faster, those defensive ends. And you know, and not just defensive ends. You got linebackers that are lining up out there that are even quicker.
In the 3-4s.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, time will tell. Time will tell here. And you know, the big thing is just get everybody healthy. And what I like to see is you got to get these guys to play along the side of each other and build that continuity, because these guys are all – none of these guys played together last year. When you think about, Pugh was on the right side. He's now on the left side. Richburg, he played in there, but Pugh was out on the right tackle. Then John Jerry, although John Jerry and Richburg played together last year, but Beattie was, I mean, Flowers, Geddes, I mean, these guys
they
gotta
weren't
have,
next to each other.
They
got to
gel.
They played together.
They
got
to gel, and I'm sure that Sean O'Hara or Rich Stoiber, any of these guys will tell you, Chris Snee, that the longer you're together and you spend time together on the field, the better chance you have of knowing what if you're next to me all the time, Lance, I know what you're thinking before you do it. And that's kind of the chemistry that they have to develop here. And when these guys are constantly being put in other positions, it's very difficult. And the ultimate goal here is to get these guys healthy and get them playing together. So maybe in that third preseason game, when they do play the extended time, that they can get that practice or that game experience, and then on the practice field too.
And the caller's point about how it's rare in this day and age for a rookie to slide right into left tackle. Jake Matthews, for example, last year with the Falcons, he started at the right side. Then due to injuries, he moved over to the left. But even when you played, you had players like Walter Jones, Anthony Munoz. They actually were drafted and went right into the left side.
Right, so. Baselli.
Yeah, correct.
You know,
he's another
guys
one.
Are all, you know, and I feel like if you are drafted in the first round as a left tackle, you're warranted to be that. You're going to be playing.
To make that immediate transition.
You're
going to
make that immediate transition, yeah, because I don't think they're going to draft you as a left tackle and put you at guard and then move you back out. So, because these guys are, they're given a lot of money. They're number one draft picks. Those number one draft picks are gems now. You hold those close to your chest. You're not going to just give those away and take a flyer on something.
Especially
these guys are
with the
researched,
rookie pay scale. Yeah.
No question.
It's
you
valuable.
Want that guy to be a 10-year player for you.
You want him to see through into the next contract.
Absolutely.
That's why it's so key. Let's go back to the lines. Frank's in Florida. Frank, what's happening?
What's up, Frank in Florida?
Hey, Jeff. Hello, Lance. Jeff,
how
I had
Frank?
The honor to speak with you the other day again. And
thank you.
And I'd like, if you guys could indulge me, you know, this is a sport that is dissected from every possible angle.
No question.
Beyond,
especially
I think,
today.
Any
holy
other.
Smokes.
Everything you could possibly imagine is discussed, except for one thing, and that's your position, Jeff. If you don't mind, you could ask a couple of questions.
Hey, come on. We never get to talk about my position. That's right. We need our own punting show. All right?
The art of punting.
You really would indulge me because I'm interested. I mean, just a few questions basically about yourself and then the position in general. But how did you get started?
Well, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, went to a Catholic school. So I didn't play football until my senior year in high school, believe it or not. You know, back then I was too small to play football. But the long story short is that I got started because I had an opportunity to go to a junior college and play. And that's all I did was punt. I did pretty good in college or high school. But I wanted to punt. I loved it. It's just like going out, hitting golf balls. You know, I just love to kick footballs. And that's how I just kind of developed into it. And through these camps, and they're out there today, these kicking camps, lacrosse camps, all this stuff, I got noticed through one of these kicking camps, and the University of Miami was looking for a punter, and I was a junior college transfer, so that was a perfect storm for them, and that's how I got to Miami. But hard work and dedication and just loving what I was doing was the formula, and that's.
Did you have any history soccer or anything?
Nothing. Nope. Just nothing. You know. I was a pitcher in high school and threw 74 miles an hour.
Didn't bode too well for you.
Didn't get me anywhere. Yeah, I was getting shelled all over the place.
Well, Jeff, can you, in your experience, can you take a young, very good athlete and make him a punter, or is it a gift, like a fastball?
It's a gift. I think it's definitely a gift. I think that punting and field goal kicking are so different. One, you're kicking something out of the air, and the other one is it's sitting there. The other thing is the leg swing. It's totally different. But I think that they're – and I'm not just saying this to be funny, but I think most of the punters are better athletes in general than the field goal kickers, because they've usually have been a quarterback or they played baseball. And so their hand-eye coordination seems to be – so if you have a player or an athlete that has good hand-eye coordination and I could teach him to hold the football the proper way and drop it, he's got a chance. So, and that's the drop in punting is 90% of it. If that ball comes out of your hand consistently every single time, I would relate it to tennis. You know, when these guys throw the ball up to serve, that's their bread and just timing. It's bread and butter, you know, every single time. So the more consistent you can get at that drop, the better. So if you're an athlete and you have good hand-eye coordination, yeah, you could do it, but it's going to take a lot of reps.
If you're a kid who has the ability, do you see ones who can, but when it actually comes down to going down and covering the kicks, that's where it separates them out? You know, you have to be a little courageous, I would imagine, to want to do that, you know, in addition to kicking the ball.
Yeah, I kind of chose the latter. I wasn't that courageous to go down and make the tackles, that's for sure.
Well, we have some YouTube highlights we can show.
See, I got smart at the end of my career. I decided to take all that out of the equation and just kick it out of bounds. And then the other 10 guys would say, hey, man, this is great. I said, yeah, I don't have to tackle. You don't have to tackle. And Coach Coughlin was happy with it. So that's good.
Well, Jeff, one last thing. One last question, if I could. And you know, I know I guess those camps have so proliferated these days, you know, and so it's become so specialized. Do you think the lack of access in a lot of cases to those camps is why there's such a dearth of black punters, even at the collegiate level, except for those historically black colleges? You know, you don't even see them in college anymore.
Well, I think that, I think that, one, they're expensive. And I think that, you know, sometimes that plays a part in it. And I think that, you know, because there has not been, you know, Reggie Roby and, you got the Marquise King is another black punter for the Raiders. So Rodney, who's the guy that was here for the Giants, where there was a black punter here. You know, there's not too many of them. And so I just think that there really isn't the younger guys don't look up to somebody. You know, if you have these black athletes that are basketball players or running backs, and they all want to be like that. You know, not a lot of them want to go be punters. So I think that kind of happens. I'm sure that a lot of them could be really good because they're great athletes. These track guys, I found that track, the fast muscles twitch and how fast your legs are. The guys that run track could be really, really good punters. Really good punters.
Rodney Williams.
Yep.
Yeah, because you would think if you're a kid that maybe is just, you know, a hair too small or whatever it might be, or a hair too slow, but you're a very good athlete, you know, you would think you made one heck of a nice living for 20
years. No question.
That kid would give it a shot, you know?
It's difficult. It's very hard to master punting. I mean, it's like golf. I mean, you're never hitting the perfect shot all the time. It's just always, and the problem with punting is the ball's moving. And when you got wind and all that other stuff, and it's just, you know, and consistency is the name of the game. And the guys that last a long time are the guys that are consistent, and it just comes with practice and practice and practice.
Now, Frank, are you taking notes for
taking
notes for a family member? Because it seems as if these questions are getting more and more detailed. I think Jeff went through the camp, the motion. I just want to make sure this is going to be valuable info for whoever's going to ultimately get it in a few
it
hours.
It is. I got a 13-year-old son who's about 6 foot tall.
There we go.
You
know how to groom him, Frank. You know how to groom him. All right, well, one last comment. Yeah.
One last question, if I could. Jeff, you're standing back on the, you know, in the goal, in the, you know, end zone or whatever, you know, and near the end of the game and the wind's blowing. Were you nervous?
No, I'm not nervous. I'm just focused, you know. And uh-huh. I think that one of the things that I learned later in my career was the fact that you can only do so much, you know. So, and I think there's a lot of people that try to do too much and at any position, but you have to know the limits of what you're faced against. And I learned in the Meadowlands, kicking there, that in certain situations, because we would go over there and kick in there. And I put myself in these situations all the time, wherever when the wind was blowing and this and that. I kind of knew that if I was backed up and the wind was dead in my face, that I'm not going to get a 50-yard punt here. It's just not going to happen. Where earlier in my career, I would try to defy all the odds. I'm going to kick this thing 60 yards and run off the field and get high fives. But, you know, so the older you get, the smarter you get. And I just knew that I'm only going to be able to kick this thing probably 38 or 40 yards, but what is the one thing that's going to hurt me here? And that would be if I kick one really low, 32 yards, it's coming back at me. So, you know, uh-huh. so that's the mindset that I would have in the back of the end zone. So I'm not nervous about executing the punt. I'm just trying to figure out where I can optimize the best kick and put the team in the best position. And I think a lot of times that's where guys get hurt because they really think they can do more than they can. And then, you know, as the game progressed, the 22 years that I played in the 80s, there was no punt returners. Somebody did it on the team. And then in the 90s, we got a couple guys in the league that were doing it. Well, then in the 2000s, everybody had a punt returner. And you had to understand that the punt returner is a way better athlete than the 10 guys that are covering. And I say 10 because that wasn't me. And so, you know, that's where you got to get smart, and that's where we started to learn how to directional kick and kick the ball out of bounds to take that eliminate that play, take 38, 40 yards, and just go home. And Coach Coffin used to tell me all the time, just give me 38 yards out of bounds. Now, does 38 yards in my stats look good? No. But I don't, you know, shouldn't care about that. You should care that I'm getting 38 yards of field position for my team. And so, you know, nowadays you're seeing guys kicking them 60. These guys got big legs, man. These guys are averaging 50 yards on the season, boom. But they're also giving up 600 and 700 yards in returns. You know, you've got a gun to your head with these guys. So hopefully with Harris, the guy the Giants picked up, you know, that's what I'm talking about. You need a big play guy back there to make some things happen in special teams plays.
Frank.
Well, Jeff, all these years that I had the honor of watching you kick, and I would sit and think about these questions, and I really can't believe that I'm actually having the pleasure of
that's
asking.
That's awesome. Well, you can see that I could talk about punting forever, you know. So, but I appreciate it. Good luck with your son.
Frank, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. Let's try to squeeze in one more caller here as we're running out of time. But Joe has been holding. He's in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hi, guys. Jeff, Lance there.
Hi, Joe.
I don't want to be pessimistic there or anything with the offensive line. I'm just hoping that these injuries, we're getting them out of the way now, and they're minor, and we'll go forward. And I was just looking at who we're going to play here, that the AFC East and the NFC East, and I think they're going to be dogfights, and I want to continue up on what Frank was saying with these special league teams. And I think if we ever have the players to pull out great specialty teams, I really think we have it this year. And last year, I think the Eagles had about five games where their specialty teams scored touchdowns. And
correct. They led the league at one point in that category, return touchdowns and special teams touchdowns, block punts,
the Eagles.
Interceptions.
First part of the season, they were amazing.
They had like seven we were talking about
returning
that.
If ever I think this year, I look at last year's draft and this year's draft, the young guys we have here, the running backs, the receivers. I remember Montre Moore, was it last year, blocking kick and everything. I think we really could pull out some of these games with these guys this year on specialty teams. And that's all I wanted to say and hope, you know what I mean? I really do think we have the players. It's going to be some dogfights. I think all these games really are, and we have the young players to pull some out, some wins with them. That's all I want to say.
All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone
call.
Have a good
weekend,
Joe. Thanks so much
for
weighing in.
You know, when you look at this roster, you go down it, you know, it is a pretty young roster. You know, it's the Giants have turned over a lot of players, and they got a lot of young guys. And, you know, I think he's right. It's special teams, that Eagles team last year. Remember when we were doing the pregame, we were just looking. It was, when we were like, really? Look, at, I mean, you're kidding me.
There were some games with two or three return touchdowns.
And, so those are, and if even if they're not, even if they're not returned for touchdowns, at least a block kick, or even, you know, if you get a 40-yard punt return, that's four first downs for your offense. And, you know, we could talk special teams all day. It is a third of the game, but it is overlooked in a sense. I know that the coaches will tell you they spend more time than anybody does. You know, they all say that. But that's fine. But it's where it comes down to is the players, the guys that are on this roster. There's five of them usually every year that make this team because of the special teams. There's five special teams guys. Those got to be your leaders. And then you got to get some of the other guys to step up because, you know, you got to have some starters playing on special teams. But making big plays in the kicking game is what it's all about. And I know we got to go. The new extra point, that's something that's going to kind of come into effect here, you know, maybe in the latter part of the season and how things go. I think at the first part of the year, they're going to try to figure this thing out. You know, do we go for two from the one, or we kick, you know, it's going to be interesting. And I'm sure they've already done their studies. Everybody's already done their, you know, their guys. They've got the guys that work in the organization that do all the analytics on this stuff. But so it'll be interesting to see how this pans out this year with this extra point.
The one thing real quickly before we sign off here, I'll say about Joe's point, the reason why I think special teams could be a big part of how successful the Giants are this season, if you look at the free agents they brought in, Jeff, Jonathan Casillas, JT Thomas, special Dwayne teams, Harris, they're not just teams. Starters, but they're special teams guys. So that was definitely a focal point this offseason.
There's no question. And those three names right there, those guys made their money on special teams. They weren't starters. I mean, they started some games you know, Dwayne Harris can make a big, big impact in the kicking game.
And if Jeff was still playing, he'd be kicking it out of bounds away from Dwayne Harris.
I would not kick to him.
There we go. That's exactly what we learned. Yeah. And next week, we'll also be breaking down Jeff Fiegel's elementary school and middle school.
Yeah,
yes, exactly right. We'll definitely get into more in depth.
No problem.
Absolutely.
No problem.
Jeff, always a blast.
Thanks, Lance.
The time.
Yep, you got it, buddy.
That's going to wrap up our coverage on Big Blue Kickoff this week. We will be up and running on Monday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, the new time, obviously, during the course of training camp. So we'll continue to take your phone calls and your tweets. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll speak to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.